The reading for this morning comes from the Book of Awakening, a book with one spiritual passage for each day of the year, by the poet Mark Nepo. Staying porous. I am jogging in the city on a hot summer day, and my legs are in a rhythm carrying me without much guidance through small crowds, past roses, and bus stops. I begin to think about my struggle not to give myself away. When growing up, I had to check myself at the door like a coat in order to relate to others. Often, I had to pretend to be less than I was in order to be loved. For years, I would shelve my light in order to take care of others. Like a firefighter, I would drop whatever I was doing to rush to the rescue. For so long, the choice seemed only to stay open and lose myself, or to close up and cut others off. But today, while running freely through the streets, being close to others but not entangled, I realize I am learning, after many attempts, that I can stay close and porous, caring and present, without holding anyone's anxiety, and without going underground. At least I can try. I am dripping and breathing like a small horse. It is clouding over, and it begins to rain slightly. I move through these beautiful people and ask for a hot dog with mustard and sauerkraut. As I chew this simple food, rain from the sky meets rain from my body. And in the rain, sweating the tang of sauerkraut on my lip, I feel joy. Others shuffle by. Today, there is no room for feeling worthless.
The heart of all religious traditions has always been compassion. This is what the scholar Karen Armstrong says in her book, 12 Steps to a Compassionate Life. Compassion is not a sectarian faith statement, but a universal impulse. And compassion is a practice. She says this practice is necessary for human flourishing and for human survival. In her book, Armstrong lists the many religions and philosophical traditions that have their own version of the golden rule, which is basically, treat others in the way that you would wish to be treated, and do not treat others in a way you would not want them to treat you. Jewish and Christian scriptures add love to this rule. Love your God and love your neighbor as yourself. That's the way the commandment reads. But what if you don't love yourself enough to know what loving your neighbor means? What if compassion feels like an exhausting expectation and you feel inadequate and ashamed about it? Love your neighbor as yourself. What if your neighbor asks to move in? Or they ask for your car and never bring it back. Or at least not ever with any gasoline in it. What if that neighbor asks you to marry them and make them happy and make their family happy and make your family happy? The poet Mark Nepo confesses that when he got married the first time, even while walking down the aisle, he knew he didn't want to do it. But he went along. He was young, and he was used to doing what others expected of him, regardless of his feelings. All of the above are examples of the affliction known as codependency. As we consider the importance of compassion, it seems important to distinguish between acts of compassion and those of codependent compulsion. But it's not simple or straightforward. We can find ourselves in big occasions and small situations in which we're not sure where compassion ends and self-sacrifice takes over. There's no formula. There's only the need for contemplation and for courage. What if others take advantage of your lack of self-love or your lack of self-confidence? If you really were good, if you really were compassionate, if you were a caring person, you'd do this. What if a loved one abuses you, telling you that's what love means, that taking it is what it means to be a good partner? If we don't have enough self-esteem, we may think that the only way to be worthy is to serve the needs of others. In our drive to help one another, sometimes we can force our good intentions on them for their own good, we think. After we go to the trouble to listen and to show our concern, if they don't take our advice, follow our example, or accept our help, we can feel rejected and resentful. I recently heard this joke. Why does a codependent person buy two copies of every self-help book? One copy to read and one to give away to somebody who really needs it. Codependent behaviors are familiar to people who grew up in families without consistency, honesty, safety, or healthy expressions of emotions. Such family situations may include alcohol or drug addiction, domestic violence, or sexual abuse. When a child feels the situation is out of control and scary, they do what they can to try to regain and keep stability. Some children withdraw or get quiet, finding a way to escape the chaos that they feel. Sometimes a child becomes the scapegoat for the family's anxiety and stress, and that child will try to lie low and not get noticed. To be accepted and loved while growing up, we don't ask for what we need emotionally. Even if we feel very odd and scared inside, we strive to appear normal and cool, to have it all together. To obtain praise and approval, we do good deeds and make others laugh. Some children fall into the role of caretaker, solving problems or holding things together when adults can't or won't be reliable. This is an unfair burden for a child, of course. As a boy, I did nearly all of those things. I worried over my father's drinking and my parents' unhappiness. I tried to keep things calm, and I feared arguments. The way I got attention was to be funny and to be a good listener. Looking back, I was such a quiet boy, I cannot believe how many hours I wasted listening to relatives who were tedious, narrow-minded, self-centered, manipulative, and sarcastic. I should send them a bill. But they're all dead now. I remember my late mother with love. I appreciate many of the things that I recall about her. However, she did not have a calm presence in the midst of pain. A gentle reaction to the surprise of bad news was not her gift. It was mine. I'm 15 years old, and it's a sunny, warm spring day, and I am out riding my bike in my hometown. And I run on some gravel, and the bike slips out from under me, and I crash, mangling my hand and scraping my ankle. I hobble home walking the bike, and I go inside, and I find my mom sitting on the sofa reading the newspaper. And I put my hand behind my back so she won't see the bloody hand, and I say, "Mom, don't get mad because it doesn't hurt as bad as it looks." And then I take it out to show it to her. And as expected, she scolds me for frightening her. "Damn it, Roger." Now, as the manager, the household appointed manager of Family Stress, I am in a dilemma because I don't want to add stress to her day, but I do need help. It is a dilemma. Now, I know there are people in this room who can top that story of mine. But since I have a meeting soon after church, I will trust you to share your stories with one another at coffee hour or at lunch here. And email me the best ones. But share your stories only if you'd like to. And listen if you're able. Just listening, just letting somebody know they've been heard, that is an act of compassion complete in itself. No advice is necessary. Another dynamic of codependency is perfectionism in kids and then in us as adults. If you do it all and you do it all right, you will be liked and accepted. That is the myth. If you're truly accomplished, maybe you'll even be feared and respected. I got a certificate for perfect school attendance at the award ceremony on the last day of ninth grade. However, I was recovering at home from the injuries of my bicycle accident, so I was not in attendance on that day. The myth of perfectionism will keep us from feeling whole or secure even to the last day of school. In my early adulthood, the way I connected with people was to be available, ever helpful, self-sacrificing, and a problem solver who did not burden people with his own problems. I can relate when Mark Nepo says that, like a firefighter, he used to drop everything and run to the rescue. One symptom of codependency is the desire to find people to rescue, to appoint ourselves the fixers. This can put others off, unless they like to be rescued or fixed. Yet to love someone is not to fix them. It is not compassion at all, Nepo says. It is merely our desperation to quiet our own anxious burdens. Having learned to set our needs aside, push our feelings down, and look to others first, codependent persons can find ourselves in amusing situations. And others can find us aggravating. It's dinner time. Where do you want to go? I don't care. Where do you want to go to eat? I don't care. That's why I asked you. Well, I want to go wherever, whatever place makes you happy. What makes me happy is to know where you want to go. Well, let's go to the Thai palace. No.
I'm not in the mood for that. Well, why didn't you say what you wanted? And so on and so on. Now, a former partner of mine and I achieved a solution for that very annoying routine that was mostly my routine, which was when I said, okay, tell me three places that you would be happy to go to, and I will choose one of them. And that plan worked. He was relieved, and he was so relieved that the first time we did it, he picked up the check.
I've heard it said that you might be codependent if you are drowning or falling off a cliff and in your last moments and somebody else's life is flashing before your eyes. However, it is important to make a distinction between the compulsion of codependency and the real role of a caregiver. One who is giving care or giving support to a loved one typically is doing so voluntarily. There may be stress in that role and often sadness, as in cases of declining health or declining ability in a parent or in a partner. Even in joyful situations, such as caring for a baby, there is stress. As caregivers, we may feel strong emotions. Sometimes we may be exhausted. We may doubt ourselves or second-guess ourselves. But my sense is that in most caregiving situations, we are making a voluntary commitment and a loving choice to be there. To be sure, a caregiver can benefit from the support of others, a visit, a listening ear, an outing, or a home-cooked meal can be a blessing. But sometimes caregivers get so caught up in caregiving that they don't ask for support, even if others would be happy to help. This is why it's good for the rest of us to offer to help and to offer our help in specific ways. And then a caregiver can be free to accept or decline that specific offer of help. This chosen role of compassion, while often not easy, is different from the compulsions that come with codependency. For those of us who learned such compulsions as coping mechanisms as children, we can still get confused about our role and our good intentions as adults. And we can fail to see the impact of our helpful intentions, fail to see the harmful impact that our good intentions might be doing to us or to another person. I love a cartoon of two parents working at the kitchen table, sheets of paper crumpled and strewn around them. They are gritting their teeth and pulling on their hair, and their eyes are stressed. A few feet away, their teenager sits watching television with his feet on a coffee table. Son, one parent says, would you mind helping us out a minute with your math homework? Nepo says that it is delicate and never-ending work, the sorting of what is truly ours to do and what is not. It is the work of discernment and contemplation. It calls for patience with ourselves. It may also call for professional support as we try a new path or get clear on a boundary and then learn to express our boundary. Therapy or counseling might be a good start. So can recovery groups such as Adult Children of Alcoholics or Codependents Anonymous, A number of classic books offer insight and encouragement, and I have one to lend you. And of course, in addition to books, there's now an online presence for Codependent Anonymous and Codependence Anonymous and other 12-step groups. It is lifelong work to discern what's ours to do and what is ours to choose and what is not. One of the benefits of a spiritual community like this one is that we have opportunities for spiritual practice and contemplation. We offer groups for learning how to listen. We invite one another to speak from the heart as we listen. Listening in itself is a complete act of compassion. In the words of Mark Nepo, there is a difference between sharing someone's pain and bearing it. Sharing pain means to listen, to be present, pay attention, pray, send a note, cook a meal, or sit with someone in pain. Yet by and large, we cannot make another's journey for them, nor can we push them down the road that they're on. Meg Barnhouse is a UU minister from the South, currently serving in Austin, Texas. Meg loves it when she's in a restaurant or a diner and a server calls her hon. She says it's a sign of affection while the person is caring for the customer's needs. In one of her essays, Meg Barnhouse recalls working as a waitress in a restaurant years ago when she was a young woman. I learned useful things while serving food to strangers. I know how to rush around with my hands full, thinking about six things at the same time. This has stood me in good stead as a working mother of two small sons. The most helpful thing I learned while waitressing was that some tables are my responsibility and some are not. A waitress gets overwhelmed if she has too many tables, and no one gets good service. In my life, I have certain things to take care of: my children, my work at the church, myself, and one or two causes. That's it. Other things are not my table. I would go nuts if I tried to take care of everyone, if I tried to make everybody do the right thing. If I went through my life without ever learning to say, "Sorry, that's not my table, hon," I would burn out. I'd be no good to anybody. I need to have a surly waitress inside myself whom I can call on when it seems that everyone in the world is waving an empty coffee cup in my direction. My inner waitress looks over at them, keeping her six plates balanced and her feet moving, and says, "Sorry, hon, not my table." Meg Barnhouse learned that roles and boundaries can help us choose our commitments and be more effective and have more serenity. In the bad habits of codependency, we can get so focused on others that we neglect ourselves. We don't even know ourselves. But as Meg might say, we are the first table in the diner to be attended to. If we can't get clear about our own wishes or needs, we'll be running to and fro. We'll be knocked about and exhausted. And we probably won't do very well at being of service to others. What is ours to carry? Who is ours to carry? There is no easy answer for all situations. We may choose our commitments freely, even if those can be painful to keep sometimes. And it is not comfortable to see problems and think that we should help, but not know how. It may not be simple to know our limits or easy to realize what's off limits for even our good intentions. This kind of discernment is a lifelong journey, a lifelong process. To be sure, we need more compassion in our world and in our lives. We need it. And this begins with self-compassion. As Karen Armstrong says, patience and compassion for oneself is the foundation for treating others with compassion. Regard yourself with kindness, the way you think everyone deserves to be regarded. In the days to come, may we choose our commitments with care and serve them with generosity and love. May we clarify our needs and wishes and practice the courage of asking for help. Let us practice gently offering help as well. May we learn to serve one another with grace and gratitude, with generosity, and an awareness of our limits as well as of our gifts. In the days to come, let us live with compassion, learning as we go. So may it be. Blessed be, and amen.